It's decision time. If you're a TV fan, those words are usually heard with some kind of like pulsing tense music in the background as the contestant has to make the final choice. Or maybe with screams of adoring fans in the background as the judges have to decide who will be the person to get through. If you're an X Factor fan, don't know if there are any here tonight, tonight is the moment that we discover who has the X Factor. A, Anthony, B, no B's, C, Charlotte, or D, Dalton. Who has the X Factor? It's decision time. Or if you're more of an I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, you've got a bit more time, next week's your decision. Or if you're a Strictly fan, another 2 weeks. If you're not really a reality show fan at all, perhaps your decisions this morning are more about Christmas presents and the size of the turkey you think you're going to need. And of course, on a more serious note, it's decision time for our Parliament with regards to the proposed Brexit bill very shortly. Lots of different kinds of decisions. And some decisions really do matter, don't they? How will we decide? What's going to inform our decisions? And what will the consequences be anyway? Well, this morning we're going to look at a passage in the Bible that comes from the book of Isaiah in the Old Testament. If you haven't been with us before, then we're looking at the various passages in this book of Isaiah, over several weeks until the end of the year. Now, last week, if you were with us, we had a window into Isaiah's vision of God. He saw the holy, holy, holy God, high and lifted up and seated on a throne, his glory filling the universe. And we heard this God calling Isaiah, who chose to take up God's challenge. He decided to respond and he listened to God's call. Well, today, we're going on to something quite different. In a moment, Lewis is going to come and read to us Isaiah chapter 7. And we move on into a historical episode. Just want to flick down, there you go. A historical episode where King Ahaz has to make his own decision. Where we are, we're in Jerusalem, in the southern kingdom of Judah. We've got Judah and Israel. And when we are is 735 BC. So we're going to hear Lewis read chapter 7. There are some good names in this. It's a bit of, going to be a bit of a challenge for Lewis, so bear with him as he tackles some less familiar names. And I want you to listen.
When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken, as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son, Sheg-Joshab, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool, on the road to Launder's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of all those surrounding smouldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram, and of the son of Remaliah, Aram, Ephraim, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves, and make the son of Tabeel king over it. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will not take place, it will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Again the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether it is in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows enough to reject the word and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. The Lord will bring on you and on your people and on the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah. He will bring the king of Assyria.
Thank you, Lewis. Okay, quite a complicated passage. You might think, what on earth are we doing this for? But let's get into it a bit and see what it's got to say. So let's just start off by being clear what's happening in this part of the world in 735 BC. Don't worry if history isn't normally your thing, but if we can't really understand what's going on at the time, then we won't be able to make much sense of the passage. God's words are always spoken to real people at real time. And so the more we understand about the context in which he speaks and what God was saying then the more we can see what it might have to say to us today in 2018. So where we are in this passage, we're in Jerusalem, as I said. Ahaz is the king of Judah. And he's not a great king, to be honest. If you read elsewhere in the Bible, in 2 Kings, we find that actually he's a rubbish king. But it's a time of political uncertainty. Assyria is the great superpower. You'll see that kind of outline in red there. That's what the empire that Assyria ends up with in the end. And they're threatening all the little nation states down the edge of the Mediterranean. Now, the specific situation that we hear about here is that the two next door countries, that's Israel in pink and Aram in green there, Aram's normally called Syria, you might know it as that, they've approached King Ahaz and they want him to join in a political alliance to take on and try and get rid of Assyria. That's quite a big ask. So Ahaz is pretty unwilling to take on Assyria and so he refuses to join this. So instead, Israel and Aram decide that they're going to attack Jerusalem instead. Well, as we hear the words of verse 2, it was a move that struck terror into the hearts of the Judean people. This is what it says, that they were shaken as trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. So clearly they were all very worried. So what would they do? What would they decide? Well, God sends Isaiah to meet Ahaz as he's checking out the city's siege water supply. And what is God's message? Well, it says, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid, verse 4. These two enemies that you're so terrified of, well, they're nothing but smouldering bits of firewood. They'll be put out in a moment. They might look strong, they might sound fierce, but to God, they are nothing. And within a lifetime, this country that you're so worried about will be completely shattered and won't even be a country anymore. So, says God through Isaiah, trust me. And verse 9, he says, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. It's a kind of all or nothing kind of challenge from God. Stand firm in your faith, trust me completely, or you won't be standing at all. There's no like middle ground. Trust God and be kept safe, but if you don't, well, don't expect it to all work out well. It's decision time. But what does Ahaz decide? What would you decide if you were in his shoes? Have you ever faced a situation that seemed impossible to come through? Maybe you too feel all too familiar with that feeling of being completely overwhelmed, of helpless, of feeling that there's no way through the situations that you face. Well, Isaiah's challenge to Ahaz is to stand firm in your faith. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. It's the all or nothing decision time. And to reinforce the consequences of this choice, Isaiah is told to take his son, named Shear-Jashab, whose catchy little name means a remnant will return. Now, in our culture, we tend to choose names, don't we, on the ones that we like the sound of, and meaning is kind of like a low-down second in why we choose. Now, I'm not sure, you guys, why you chose Oliver for your son's name. Did you know what it meant, or did you just like the sound of it? Yeah, see, that's how we often choose our names. We like the name, it sounds good. But my baby name research tells me that Oliver means olive tree, a symbol of fruitfulness, beauty, and dignity. And extending an olive branch means signifying an offer of peace. So there you go. Ollie can bring a bringer of peace wherever he goes. So lots of good things for him to be associated with. I suspect if these guys had stood up and named him a remnant will return, you might have all been a little bit worried about them. And I'm pretty sure that if I'd been Isaiah's wife, I wouldn't have been too chuffed with the name that Isaiah had chosen either. But there you go. But this name that Isaiah's son has is a prophetic name for the people of Israel. It was a challenge. The consequences of Ahaz's choice would be monumental. It was decision time, but choose wrong and only a remnant would return. Now, we don't know how long this little episode that we've had takes. We don't know what break there is between Isaiah's first conversation with Ahaz and then God sending him back again in verse 10. Clearly, they don't know what Ahaz has decided. So it's another chance to choose trust, another chance to stand firm in his faith. Trust firmly in God, you'll have nothing to fear. Now, this time, when Isaiah goes to see Ahaz, God tells Ahaz to ask for a sign. And not just a small sign, God invites him to ask for something big, whether in the deepest depths or the highest heavens. God is asking Ahaz to be daring in reaching out to him. He invites him to ask that question, God, are you really there? God is pulling out all the stops to try and get Ahaz to trust him, to exercise faith. Let me show you that I'm here, says God. No, it's wrong to test God. Perhaps he's thinking of the book of Deuteronomy and quoting that a bit like Jesus does when he's in the wilderness. But if we actually look back at what was happening then, the Israelites in the desert are being told off for refusing to believe that God will make good on what he's already promised. Here it's a bit the opposite. God is inviting Ahaz to see how good he really is, but Ahaz backs off. It's as if he doesn't really want evidence to support God's power, because then he might have to act on it. But he dresses it up in religious-sounding language. And I wonder again if perhaps that's something that we've come across ourselves, either in ourselves or in others. We actually kind of push God away a bit, because we don't really want to have to deal with the consequences of him actually being there. We demand proof when only actually maths theorems can really be proved, but we're unwilling to look at evidence in case it points us in a direction that we've already decided we don't really want to go in. And this must surely be the case for Ahaz, because elsewhere the Bible tells us what he actually chooses. I'm going to read to you now 2 Kings chapter 16, a couple of verses from there, which tells you what Ahaz actually decided. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria. I'm your servant and vassal. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Aram and the king of Israel, who are attacking me. And Ahaz took the silver and gold found in the temple of the Lord and in the treasuries of the royal palace and sent it as a gift to the king of Assyria. The king of Assyria complied by attacking Damascus and capturing it. He deported its inhabitants to Kir and put Rezin to death. So Ahaz's cunning solution is to approach the chief arch enemy, Assyria, and ask them for help and offer God's treasure for their protection. Talk about out of the frying pan and into the fire. Decisions made out of fear are almost always bad decisions. I wonder if you know that in your own experience or in the lives of others. Only this week I was on a safeguarding course and we looked at why people do the things that they do, why they choose to stay in places that are unsafe. And so often it's because of fear. Fear is a dangerous decision-making partner. Whatever decisions we're facing, don't let fear be our determining factor. That's one of the good reasons why it's never good to make decisions on your own. Best to talk through with others. God will no doubt have a different perspective on your situation, but let's make sure that we don't decide quickly out of fear. Now, back in Jerusalem, in BC 735, God is not fooled by Ahaz's sounding response. God knows what's really going on. And God has told him to ask for a sign, so God is going to give him a sign anyway. Now, verse 14 is no doubt a verse you've heard before at Christmas. He says, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. Well, a couple of quick things here, which I've kind of highlighted in yellow there. The English hides it, but the you in this verse is plural. So it reads a bit more like, the Lord himself will give you all a sign. This sign isn't just for Ahaz, it's for all people. And secondly, if you do your research, you'll find that there's a bit of controversy about the word that we've got translated here as virgin, whether it should be virgin or young woman. And there's clear evidence to support both readings, but it's likely that Isaiah chooses this is a slightly obscure word that isn't really one or the other, not the in-your-face word for a virgin, but something a little bit ambiguous. And this word leaves it open for a regular fulfillment in Isaiah's day. A young, unmarried virgin girl will get married, have a child, and call him Emmanuel. And it's a name, really, that is so significant, isn't it? Because Emmanuel, as we've been looking at already this service, means God is with us. And perhaps this is the heart of the sign for Ahaz. God is with us. There is a seemingly impossible path to be trod through between a rock and a hard place, but God's message is that God is with us. But as so often in Isaiah, this message from God is both hope, but also has hints of judgment too. The sign works both ways. For Ahaz, God is with them. They don't have to fear if they trust him, if they really remember that he's there. But Ahaz has forgotten that the Lord Almighty is there. And if he continues to reject him and send his treasures off to foreign kings, well, God will bring the attention of Assyria in quite a different way. And so this little sign ends off in verse 17 by saying, the Lord will bring on you and your people, do you want to put the next slide up, Joe, if it's there, on the house of your father, a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah. He will bring the king of Assyria. So the one that Ahaz turns to for help actually is the one who will be his enemy. And I wonder how often we see that in our lives as well. People wrestling with extreme stress might turn to alcohol to cope, only to discover that the alcohol bites back and enslaves them. Or perhaps somebody with anorexia turns to something else to numb the pain, perhaps drugs or something, only to discover that the drugs are just as much a problem as the thing that they were trying to escape from. You see, we humans are experts at disastrous coping strategies, aren't we? God's sign to Ahaz is that God is with us, Emmanuel. He's where we need to go to cope. Other solutions might seem attractive, but won't help us in the long run. And of course, the long run is definitely what's in view here. Because if you kind of think it through, this is a really weird sign that God gives Ahaz here. Someone's going to get pregnant and have a baby. Well, that's not exactly a very quick sign, is it, for a start? We're still into 9-month pregnancies, not quite the Doctor Who scenario of a week, for those of you who are watching the new Doctor Who series. This isn't exactly an immediate sign that we have here. And then it's a bit of an underwhelming sign as well, isn't it? I mean, anyone could have heard this prophecy and thought, oh, awesome, God's with us. I'm going to call my next son Emmanuel. That sounds so good. I do need to be reminded that God is with us. And it's definitely a better name than Shir Jashab anyway. You see, history does tell us that within a few years, these predictions do come true. Both Assyria and Israel are totally defeated by Assyria. But I'm not sure that would really have been much of a comforting sign to Ahaz, given the other bit of the prediction about Assyria and himself. Now, of course, we here in 2018, looking back 2,700 years further on, we can see there's so much more to this sign than its initial fulfillment. It clearly has a single meaning. God is with us. But we need not fear anything, any situation, any enemy that faces us. But it's got a double significance, as so often things in the Bible do in the Old Testament. For Ahaz, it was very much about his time. God's message was not to fear Aram and Israel. God could be trusted. God was bigger than them. But for us, there is so much more. Today we start Advent, as we've been thinking about, looking forward to the birth of the one who's called Emmanuel, God coming to live among us in the flesh. We can see a bigger fulfillment. God was with his people, the Israelites. He did never abandon them. As Isaiah's son predicted, a remnant did remain. Although disaster did come, they were not wiped out. God did remain faithful despite their faithlessness. But now for us, God has come to earth clothed in human flesh in the person of Jesus. No wonder Isaiah uses this slightly ambiguous word for woman. The virgin birth of Jesus 700 years later was going to explode everyone's preconceptions of God and what it really means for God to be with us. And now, through what Jesus achieved on his life and death and resurrection, we can experience the living God living within us by his Spirit. God chooses to come into the life of everyone who turns to him. We can experience God's presence in a real and tangible way in our difficult situations today. So for each of us here this morning, there may be a sense in which we too have a decision time. It might be an all or nothing decision, very like Ahaz faced. Will you entrust yourself to the living God? Despite all the seemingly impossible things around, will you decide to take God at his word and trust that he will take you safely through life and death? I can't prove to you that God will come through for you. As I mentioned earlier, proof belongs only to the field of mathematics. But actually, I can point to lots of evidence of people who've gone before and discovered that God is faithful. Now, of course, exercising faith, it's always faith. There is a sense in which it's a step into the unknown. You might think you know what lies ahead, but you're not completely sure until you take that step. But we do have the privilege of being able to look around and seeing God come through in thousands of other people's lives, both locally here in our church and all around the world. Other props and supports, and just like squeezing him in a little corner. We can't just add him to our otherwise sorry, self-sufficient kind of life and think that he'll just make it all better. God is sovereign. He's God. He's the Lord. Don't make Ahaz's mistake of trying to invite God in while actually sorting it all out yourself another way. It might be decision time. What will we decide? And perhaps your decision this morning is just to pick yourself up again and keep going with God again. Maybe you've trusted him for a long time, but just too much at the moment. Maybe you're too tired to trust him again. Well, God says, if you don't stand firm in your faith, you won't stand. Maybe you need to decide to wait patiently for God to come through. God's in that long game. There was 700 years before this promise to Isaiah and Jesus actually coming as Emmanuel. That was a long time, but it didn't seem to bother God how long it was. The New Testament says it was just the right time. We need to stand firm. Now today, Matt and Jesse have decided they want to thank God for Ollie's life, his arrival, and ask for God's blessing upon them. They've decided that. And as he grows, he'll need to make his own decisions about what he wants to do, whether he's going to follow Jesus for himself. No one can take that decision away from him. He alone can make it. And that's the same for each of us. We have to make our own decisions. But today, let's remind ourselves that the God who calls us to decide for him is the God who is with us, who stepped into our messy world as Emmanuel. He will never leave us and promises to go through everything with us. Let's pray for a moment.